Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, September 16th, 2021. Marfa Council adds grant writer job and books up fire station funds in city budget, sets hearing for tax decrease. By Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa's elected officials had their first shot at responding to Mayor Manny Baez's proposed 2021-2022 budget at a meeting on Monday night, where they amended line items to create a new grant writing position and to increase spending on the renovation of the city's firehouse. At the same meeting, they adopted the 2021 tax rate. Council also debated the future of road improvements and the potential to levy local sales taxes, though they delayed action on either. Finally, the council set a hearing for the proposed tax rate, which is set to decrease city property tax rates slightly if council approves it later this month. Council member Yosef Ben Yehuda drove much of the conversation on Monday night, proposing a handful of changes to his fellow council members. That evening, Ben Yehuda, who also serves as a volunteer firefighter for the city, asked council to bump up the funds allocated to renovate the city's iconic pink fire station. While renovations have been discussed and budgeted for years, the project has been slow going since it has primarily relied on volunteer efforts to draw up plans and seek bids. The mayor said the money to fund the project had, quote, been carrying over for years, and we asked them to please start so we don't use it for something else, end quote. Ben Yehuda said the fire department was ready to move on the project, but explained why he hoped the funding could increase this year. While $82,500 was already put toward the project, the council member believed that the costs would exceed that and the small budget would fail to cover the project, even if it was phased. He estimated the project could go as high as $200,000 and said the department had hesitated to send the plans out to contractors for bids when we don't have the money to actually pull the trigger on that, he said. Council member Buck Johnston and Mayor Pro Tem Irma Salgado were reluctant to add more funds to the project, noting that it would be easy to add the money, but harder to adjust it down later in the budget negotiations if money was needed elsewhere. I think you stick with the $82,500, Johnston said. On a narrow vote, council members Raul Lara and Eddie Payares sided with Ben Yehuda, pushing the funding to $122,000 for fire station renovations. Ben Yehuda said, $122,000 doesn't get us all the way, but we can seriously begin with the contractor and say we're ready to go. Ben Yehuda also advocated for a new position in the city's ranks, a contract employee that would be a municipal grant writer that seeks funds for city projects. The council members suggested $50,000 for the part-time position, which could be parsed out as a $50 per hour role, working 20 hours a week. The employee would go after at least one infrastructure grant, Ben Yehuda proposed, which he hoped would bring in more than six figures in funding, along with additional grants that could help the Emergency Management Services Department, Fire Department, and others that could benefit from grant writing. I think it will be a moneymaker, he told the council. The other elected officials were amenable to the proposal, and City Manager Mandy Roan weighed in. We definitely need help. I can't do all the grants on top of all my administrative work, Roan said. As far as a $250,000 grant, it's a lot of paperwork, and we don't have hands on deck to do all of it. Councilmember Payares heartily supported the proposal, believing the position would bring in more money for the city than the position would cost. When it came up for a vote, the council agreed, unanimously approving the contract position for 2021-2022. Council also attempted to wrangle some of the costs proposed in the city budget. Under the mayor's initial proposal, part of the city's costs, including big-ticket capital outlays on equipment, vehicles, and large renovation projects, were going to be covered using money already saved up in the city's bank account rather than revenues generated in the new fiscal year. In an effort to decrease that reliance on banked money, council proposed the city finance some of its planned equipment purchases, which include a new fleet vehicle and skid steer for the Public Works Department and a mini excavator for the city's water department. As we know, our infrastructure is in need of repair, Mayor Baeza said, in support of the purchases. However, the mayor agreed with council that if the city could finance those purchases instead of buying the equipment outright, the city could save money this fiscal year and defer some of those costs into following years. In the mayor's budget proposal, major city street projects took a back seat after issues with the city groundwater storage tank led the mayor to allocate funding to remedy the water issue over roads. Last year, the city paid Texas-based KSA engineers to generate engineering plans and designs for major overhauls of Russell and Mesa streets in city limits. While the designs are expected to arrive any day now, Ben Yehuda said, we basically have no money allocated to a major project. The projects could face a year of stagnation after the engineering plans arrive, though, Baeza explained. We came upon that groundwater storage tank and had to allocate all that money, adding, I'd rather have citizens complaining about roads than water. The mayor estimated the two road projects would cost the city $800,000 to $1 million, but didn't nix the 2021-2022 road plans altogether. The mayor and council agreed to reconsider roads budgeting later this month, after numbers arrived from KSA Engineering, scheduling a special meeting just to hear from the roads experts. That wasn't the only meeting planned during the Monday budget workshop. As part of the budget season, the city set a date to consider and adopt their new city property tax rate. Due to a reduced debt load over the past year, the city's calculations to find their tax rate options gave a startling conclusion. The no new revenue rate is a tax rate that would bring in the exact same amount of tax revenue as the previous year, and the voter approval rate is the tax rate the city can levy that allows for up to a 3.5% increase on the maintenance and operation rate. If the city increases the tax rate beyond that number, city residents can call for an election where they can roll back the tax rate. The math was clear. The city's voter approval rate was less than the no new revenue rate, meaning they would have to set the rate at the voter approval rate or risk a rollback election. Put plainly, quote, we're going to have to run in the paper a notice of a hearing on a tax decrease, end quote, city contract accountant Dan Dunlap told council. quote, "You may never see this again," end quote. The council proposed a tax rate of 0.362748 cents in tax per $100 in value, going slightly under the voter approval rate of 0.362749 cents per $100, so that they can avoid any risk of slight miscalculations, leaving them vulnerable to a rollback election. When the council remarked they were glad to run the public notice that taxes would be going down, Dunlap, a former mayor of Marfa, replied, "Of course, what politician wouldn't be?" The council even agreed to run the notice that taxes would go down two times for good measure. The council set a public hearing on the 2021-2022 proposed budget for September 28th at 5:30 p.m., where Marfa residents can weigh in before the council approves the final budget. Immediately after, council will hold a public hearing to adopt the 2021 proposed tax rate, on which residents can also provide input. Staff photo by Maisie Crow. Saul Pardo Sr. watches his son, Saul Pardo Jr., the fire chief of Presidio Volunteer Fire Department, and other volunteer firefighters as they pass in front of the American Legion building on O'Reilly Street in Presidio. Presidio volunteer firefighters wore full bunker gear and walked 3.46 miles through Presidio on Saturday in memory of the 346 firefighters lost in the September 11, 2001 attacks on the World Trade Center in New York. 20 years after 9/11, Presidio firefighters commemorate the sacrifices of first responders. By Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio. The men and women of Presidio's volunteer fire department were nearly 2 miles from their station when they circled up, removing their helmets as the summer heat grew and sweat pearled and fell down their faces. The group had gathered and set off from the fire station at 8:46 a.m. on Saturday morning, 20 years after New York firefighters first got the call to respond to the Twin Towers, where a plane had crashed into the North Tower. On Saturday, Presidio Fire Chief Saul Pardo Jr. called on his fellow volunteers to walk 3.46 miles from the fire station and through the middle of town on O'Reilly Street, each hundredth of a mile, marking the loss of another firefighter on 9/11. While hundreds of first responders rushed into the World Trade Center that late summer morning in New York when the Twin Towers collapsed, 346 firefighters never made it out. Pardo was a newly certified EMT on September 11, 2001, and the impact of the terror attacks solidified his calling as a first responder. "I just remembered being glued to the TV, watching everything unfold before my eyes, and with great sorrow in my heart," Pardo said, while at the same time feelings of anger and disbelief. Reflecting on what's changed for Presidio in the ensuing two decades, Pardo said, "Being from a small border town, it changed our way of life immensely, from the way we cross the border to the way we travel." Before departing the station this weekend, the group recited the firefighters' prayer and then set to work putting on full bunker gear, protective clothing worn for the most intense firefighting, fire-resistant trousers, jackets, boots, head coverings, and helmets make up the personal protective equipment, and the volunteers each carried the extra weight of oxygen tanks, axes, hoses, or tools. "I just wanted to kind of feel what they went through at that moment, which must have been hard. Hector Reyes said about suiting up for the memorial walk. At only 17 years old, Reyes wasn't alive when 911 happened, making it a piece of history he learned early on while attending school in Presidio. He said he hadn't really thought of the sacrifices made by first responders, but since becoming a first responder himself, he became more aware. Staff photo by Maisie Crow. Hector Reyes and other volunteer firefighters in Presidio dressed in full bunker gear on Saturday and walked 3.46 miles through Presidio in memory and honor of the 346 firefighters lost in the September 11, 2001 attacks on the World Trade Center in New York. Reyes, a senior at Presidio High School, wasn't alive when the attacks happened, but learned about the historic moment in school at an early age. Reyes, Fire Chief Pardo's son, is now a volunteer firefighter, part of a cohort of Presidio High School students that have joined up to commit their time and energy to the task of firefighting in West Texas. Also among the younger group are recent graduates, Karen Manriquez, 24, and Stephanie Rivera, 21. The two were too young to have any firsthand connection to the event, but chose to join the memorial walk on Saturday to show respect and honor to the people who have lost their lives, Rivera said. Volunteers at the memorial walk each spoke of the sacrifices made by first responders, both during 911 and every day. To me, I cannot imagine being the family member of those fallen first responders who passed due to an incident that never should have happened, Reyes said. They were running to the danger while people were running away from the danger, so I felt it was important for me to participate so we can show that fallen firefighters and paramedics have our respect, and we're thankful for them getting as many people out of the building as they could, the 17-year-old said. Some didn't make it, but they tried, and they helped save people. We're volunteers, so we sacrifice a little bit more because we get called out when we're at home with our family or at a party, and we have to drop everything to come over here, and a lot of people don't understand how much that takes of us, explained Rivera. But along with giving up time with family and friends, the volunteer firefighters take on the physical stress of training for and carrying out operations and the mental anguish that can come with being on the front lines. Being mentally ready and physically ready, those are the most important factors of being a firefighter, said Reyes. Fighting a large wildfire requires stamina to work hours or days on end, and handling the twisted scenes of car accidents can be a mental stress for firefighters new and old. You have to be ready for it, because if you're not, it'll get to you, and the fatalities too. On top of that, the role in Presidio is an unpaid one, which means many miss out on paid work when they are out at fires, and the department could use more volunteers and more resources. We are dispatched to the most remote areas of Presidio County with little to no support and limited equipment, Chief Pardo explained. We do what we have to do with what we have. Under all of the bunker gear and the beaming Presidio sun, Reyes said, what was going through my head was that I was tired and physically exhausted, and I can't imagine those firefighters on 911 carrying those heavy tools and going up those stairs. It must have been tough wearing all that gear. The group had stopped to catch their breath and drink some water before completing the second half of the walk. We are in the field of life saving and property saving, and when one of our brothers or sisters die in the line of duty, it is always an unforgettable and painful moment, Pardo said. fire, EMS, law enforcement, military, or any related field. I decided to commemorate in this manner in order to have a local event and raise awareness of our duty and our calling. At the halfway point of 3.46 miles, they discussed the sacrifices made by those lost on 911 and the loved ones who survived them, and then Pardo asked the group to walk the rest of the way back to the station in silence, in memory of the fallen first responders. International Rail Traffic is on the Horizon in Presidio, by Abby Perot, September 15, 2021. Presidio. It's been 13 years since a train has traveled between Presidio and Ojinaga, but the project to restore one of only six international rails between Mexico and the U.S. is closer than ever to completion. Though a timeline for the commencement of rail traffic is still hazy, as of today, the physical infrastructure to run trains across that bridge and up and down that corridor exists, said Texas Pacifico's Stan Metter. We're ready to go, he said, at least as far as infrastructure goes. After one fire in 2008 and another in 2009 wiped out the railroad bridge where goods could pass between Presidio and Ojinaga, the international mode of transport lay dormant for years. Then the Texas Department of Transportation and Texas Pacifico Transportation Limited broke ground on a project to revive the train line in 2018, 10 years after the whistles had gone quiet. Excitement brewed last December when the sound of whistles blew in Presidio, and the first train rode the rails in over 12 years, though it did not make an international crossing. As Texas Pacifico has worked to restore the rail line, the economic benefits to the area have already trickled in. The company hired local Presidio residents to labor on the rail restoration project, bringing jobs to the area during some historically tough years economically. Parts of the line between Fort Stockton and Presidio are rated for slow speeds now, but as Texas Pacifico's investment in the line continues, Metter said, there's more infrastructure work in the line that will be coming in the coming years that will allow us to grow the traffic. Since the rail will mostly travel through Presidio, the economic gains can be harder to spot. The important thing is, what does it allow to evolve over the next 5 to 10 years? Our tendency is to think, what does it mean tomorrow, Metter said. The initial day one growth will be the need for customs brokers, the presence of Texas Pacifico growing in the region, visiting the area, staying in hotels and eating at the local restaurants, Metter said, as infrastructure in Presidio gets rebuilt. I think the other opportunities you may not see on day one will start to materialize a little more. Taking into consideration that Mexico, being our largest trading partner, sits on the other side of that border, I think it's important to have as many gateways as possible for trade purposes, said Metter, the vice president of sales and marketing at Texas Presidio. The rail will increase efficiency at the port, offering more ways to pass through customs as goods travel from Fort Worth in North Texas all the way to overseas shipping ports in Topolobampo on Mexico's Pacific coast. Other rail crossings at Texas border are saturated with service, and Texas Pacifico believes the Presidio line could become a reliever route where people will ship goods through to avoid higher traffic areas. As the pandemic and a major blockage at the Suez Canal have agitated global supply chains, the company has already heard interest from shippers through California looking for new ways to reach the Pacific coast. The company expects agricultural products, bulk grains, raw materials, finished Mexican products, and more to travel through the port. With the physical rail in place in Presidio, the efforts now shift to making sure goods that come through the rail port are successfully checked by U.S. Customs. At first, that may be a temporary facility. In the final phase before trains are a go, U.S. Customs and Border Protection is collaborating with TxDOT and rail line operator Texas Pacifico to establish the infrastructure and operational procedures necessary to initiate international rail traffic via the Presidio Railroad Bridge, said Roger Mayer, a public affairs specialist for CBP. Additionally, Texas Department of Transportation continues to acquire all funding necessary to sustain international rail traffic, said CBP's statement on the rail status. No timeline for commencing international rail traffic is available at this time. The big prize is that there's a permanent customs and border facility that will be built at the bridge, and that's a $3 million facility, Metter said, and the company hopes to secure that funding in the final months of 2021. With that funding in place, they will start building that permanent facility, which will take a few years with the permitting and procurement procedures required. It's forecasted to take 30 to 36 months after the funding gets secured to have a fully operational CBP processing facility on the rail bridge, Texas Pacifico said. But what we're doing right now are features putting in place things that allow CBP to effectively process trains before that permanent facility gets built, Metter said. That would allow some train operations to begin sooner rather than later. Metter said, "It's been a long time coming. I know people locally have heard for years that the train's coming back, but we are closer than ever. We feel like we're getting really, really close to being able to provide rail traffic. It's going to be a crawl, then walk, then run scenario, but you've got to start somewhere, and we're excited about that."
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, September 16th, 2021. Front page. City offers vaccine incentive by Megan Waring. City of Fort Stockton employees will soon have an incentive to get the COVID-19 vaccine. The Fort Stockton City Council unanimously approved granting 40 hours of personal time to personnel who have received the COVID vaccine at its regular meeting held on September 14th. The hours will need to be exhausted by September 30th, 2022. "We are just trying to do something for our employees," said City Manager Frank Rodriguez. "Each employee will have an opportunity to show proof of their vaccination starting on October 1st. Rodriguez explained the Human Resources Department will be responsible for inputting their time. City employees will not be required to participate in the incentive or get the vaccine. It is voluntary. The whole purpose is to provide the incentive to voluntarily do it without forcing them," said City Manager Jess Gonzalez. A $5 credit incentive, also unanimously approved the City Council, for each account that is registered for electronic billing. This will be available for current customers that use e-billing and future customers who sign up. "This is another thing that will prevent you from coming up to the lobby or office and interacting with anyone when you can pay your bills from your home on your computer." COVID active cases dropped significantly in the county, by Nathan Heuer. In just a week's time, the number of confirmed COVID active cases in Pecos County have dropped from 63 to 46, a 27% drop. COVID confirmed active cases in the county peaked at August 31st at 74 and maintained in the 70s through September 6th. Four additional deaths were reported from county residents who tested positive in the past week. A 60-year-old male who tested positive for the virus on October 18th. A 44-year-old male passed away on September 11th at El Paso Hospital. A 45-year-old male and a 63-year-old female passed away on September 13th. The four fatalities increased the death toll to 9 since the Delta variant surged in cases started on July 28th. All 9 people who passed away were unvaccinated, according to Pecos County Management Coordinator Jesse Dominguez. There are now 9,200 individuals who have received at least one dose of the COVID vaccine in the county. That's 70% of the people's county population that is eligible. The number of fully vaccinated people is at 58%. Death in Fort Stockton under investigation by Nathan Heuer. An investigation by the Fort Stockton Police Department is currently underway involving a shooting and stabbing of a local man. Edward Ramirez was fatally shot and stabbed in Pecos Street on the morning of September 4th. 3 individuals were arrested in connection with his death, and 2 were booked into the county jail. According to Pecos County jail records, Joe Pacheco, 39, and Andrew Pacheco, 18, were booked into the facility shortly after 3 p.m. The 3rd individual was a juvenile, and no further information could be provided. Joe was charged with tamper or fabricating physical evidence with intent to impair. Andrew was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. No murder charges have been filed at this time. Joe's bond was set at $25,000 and Andrew's was set at $30,000. Both posted bail on September 6th and were released. According to the local law enforcement spokesman for the city, Ramirez was stabbed inside the Pacheco's household after breaking in and was later shot outside the residence where he deceased before the arrival of authorities. No one else was harmed in the incident. The investigation of Ramirez's death will take place over the next few weeks to determine if additional charges will be filed, according to law enforcement. The report from the investigation will then be presented to the 83rd District Attorney, Ori White. White said that a grand jury will then make the determination whether to move forward with the charges. It's always been my policy with cases involving death, even unattended death cases, to have the grand jury decide. It's the best practice in my opinion, and I've done that my entire career as a district attorney. Historic Ranch opens to hiking and agate hunting by Shauna Graves. The historic Coconut 06 Ranch traces its roots back to the early 1800s and has largely remained off-limits to anyone outside of its cattle operations or the occasional guided hunt since then. Sprawling between Alpine and Fort Davis at 108,000 acres, the ranch spans some of the most beautiful high desert country in Texas. It's finally offering access to some of its choicest locations for pleasure hiking, agate hunting, and camping opportunities. Aaron Thomas, owner of Trilobite Food Truck and a former geophysicist, has been an enthusiastic agate hunter for the past 25 years. He manages a Facebook group called Texas Rockhounds, and his side company, Take a Hike, arranges statewide rock hounding trips with scheduled posted on Facebook. Thomas struck up a relationship with an avid outdoorsman and man about town, Roy Saffel, a close personal friend to James Wynn, manager of the Ot 6. The 3 hit it off and decided to make exploratory excursions on the ranch, following Thomas's understanding of geologic processes and clues from Wynn's own hiking discoveries. Their prospecting paid off when they found multiple world-class agate sites. Thomas was given the opportunity to work out some of those sites with his Take a Hike company, and beginning in the summer of 2020, he and Saffel hosted weekly trips. Word of mouth spread quickly, and agate hunters have come from across the globe for the chance to fill their buckets with alpine agates. Rockhounds cut and polish the stones for sale or to display in rock shows, as well as for making jewelry, bookends, and other items. Agates are transparent to semi-transparent, fine-grained quartz rocks with a range of color inclusions. They occur in igneous and metamorphic zones, of which the alpine area is rich. The Woodward Ranch, south of Alpine, is one example of a site that became famous for its red plume agates. It was open to the public for a long time, closing around 2014. The Ott-6 sites are gaining a reputation for having access to the most abundant variety of agates in the world. A frequent visitor, Mark Zarensky, said the experience is incomparable. He is a sculptor from Boulder, Colorado, and has hunted agates all over the southwestern U.S., Canada, and Australia. This is by far and away the best of them all. The patterns and sheer variety, plus the incredible hosts, Aaron, James, and Roy, are getting to talk to the other rockhounds makes it great. In one afternoon of agate hunting on the Ott-6, one may find blue agate with quartz crystals, moss agate with gold and yellow, black dendritic agate, color-banded agate, plume agate, and more. From Zarensky's experience, he would have to cover 400 miles in Australia to see that kind of variety. In addition to agate hunting, the ranch offers guided hikes throughout the week and camping on selected weekends in the fall. For scouting and pricing, check the Texas Rockhounds Facebook page or contact Thomas at 432-538-2399. PCHC sets celebration at Horsehead Crossing. Pecos County Historical Commission President Paul Weatherby recently announced a two-day celebration at historic Horsehead Crossing on the Pecos River to be held November 5th, 6th. The event was first held in 2020 to commemorate the various historical figures who passed over this well-known crossing throughout the 16th to the 19th centuries. Those people included the Comanche War Trail, the Immigrant Trail, the Butterfield Overland Stage, and the Goodnight Loving Trail, which was made famous by Larry McMurtry's Lonesome Dove. The popularity of last year's celebration featured chuck wagon breakfast, storytelling, and live fire demonstrations by historical reenactors who inspired the commission to book a repeat performance. Details will be posted on the website. The event is being presented in conjunction with the PCHC, Crane, Presidio, and Upton County Historical Commissions and the Fort Stockton Historical Society. Mark your calendars for a weekend of history and celebration at one of the most iconic locations in Texas history. Horsehead Crossing is located on the Pecos River off Farm to Market 11 between Girvan and Imperial. For more information, email Delaine Cagle at DelaneCC@gmail.com or Betty Dameron at BettyDameron986@yahoo.com. Gear up for a scary fun 5K by Megan Waring. The Comanche Creek Trail and Texas Department of Criminal Justice will be hosting the first annual Scary Fun 5K charity run on Saturday, October 2nd, starting at 8. Runners and walkers will be required to pay a $10 entry fee. Additional sponsorships and donations are encouraged. All proceeds will be donated to the Correctional Peace Officers Foundation, St. Jude's Children's Hospital, and Comanche Trail. The TDCJ challenges all first responders, including law enforcement, to the race. Spectators are encouraged to bring small bills with them to participate in various activities, including choosing which first responders team will win. To keep all operations running smoothly for the race, the Comanche Creek Trail Committee asks volunteers to sign up by September 30th. For information, contact Imer Collins at 336-7676, Comanche Creek Trail President Billy Gonzalez at 290-5301, or Gabby Tamez at gabby.tamez@tpwd.texas.gov. National 4-H Week designated for October by Megan Waring. The largest youth development organization in Texas received recognition in Pecos County. At its September 13th meeting, the Pecos County Commissioner's Court proclaimed October 3 through 10 as National 4-H Week in Texas and commended the 4-H Youth Development Program of the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service for 114 of service. Texas 4-H reaches more than 550,000 youth participants with diverse backgrounds from urban, suburban, and rural areas. The proclamation reads, "This admirable program, which seeks to provide a learning experience for the whole child, including head, heart, hands, and health, helps young Texans to acquire knowledge, develop life skills, and form attitudes to enable them to become self-directed, productive, and contributing members of our society." Iran rallies behind Kent family. Iran community members were rallying support for sophomore Braden Kent and his family after his cancer diagnosis this past week. A GoFundMe page has been started by the family's friend Blake Andrew for those wanting to help financially. To donate, you can go to GoFundMe page online by typing in gofundme.com/f/help-braden-kent-through-his-journey. Into the URL of your web browser or by Googling Braden Kent GoFundMe. The link to the GoFundMe can also be found on the Pioneer's Facebook page. As of Thursday morning, the GoFundMe page showed that there were $12,725 raised. Kent's mother, Katrina Kent, said that the support has been beyond amazing and she is beyond thankful for support everyone has shown. "It's been amazing. To even say amazing is like an understatement. We've been so overwhelmed and blessed. I've got several friends. My friend Blake Andrews, she had multiple myeloma, and she went into remission. She's the one who started the GoFundMe account. She was Braden's principal at the high school at one time before she retired. We've had several donations, one to the GoFundMe, donations through our Venmo and Cash App, random strangers just handling some of our friends at home cash, some checks. We're really blessed." Braden originally went to his doctor in Rankin, Dr. Robert Beltry, on September 7th after being pale for a prolonged period of time and having pain in his hip and back. After his blood work came back and the results showed his white and red blood counts as well as platelets were extremely low, Beltry recommended that they go to the ER at Covenant Children's Hospital in Lubbock so a bone marrow biopsy and spinal tap could be done. The next day, Braden received a bone marrow biopsy, and the results came back showing he had acute lymphoblastic leukemia. That night, he received his first round of chemo, followed by another the next day. He took it well and didn't have any problems. The Iran community flooded the streets for his arrival in Lubbock from Lubbock on September 13th, his first return since being diagnosed with cancer, to show their support for him and his family. Katrina said that her 16-year-old son, who is on the Braves football team, will likely get chemotherapy treatments once a week for the next 6 to 8 months, pending on his response to treatments. Your guide to local places to go and things to do. The Fort Stockton First United Methodist Church is hosting a pinata workshop on Saturday, September 25th, starting at 6 p.m. The free workshop will provide food and supplies needed to make a pinata. The church is located on 5th Street. The Big Bend Open Road Race festivities and race will be held starting on Wednesday, October 13th, and ending with the race on Saturday, October 16th. The parade for the event will be on October 15th from 5:30 to 6 and will go through Main Street from Rooney Park to Dickinson, as did the first one of the year. The Red Shear Hair Studio will have a ribbon-cutting ceremony at their location at 906 West Dickinson at 5:30 p.m. on Friday, October 15th. The first annual Pumpkin Patch 5K run and a free kids fun run will be held at Kayanosa starting at Watermelon Row at 9 a.m. A Family Harvest Festival will follow at 10 a.m. in the same location. The Marathon to Marathon will be held Saturday, October 23rd. Four races will start north on Highway 385, which ends at the finish line in the heart of Marathon. Past a dinner Friday night at the Gage Hotel. Barbecue lunch Saturday at the finish line. Marathon Motel evening dance star party and Sunday gospel brunch at the French County Grocery.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, September 9th. Seal coating done, park gets makeover. The story was written by Smokey Briggs. This year's round of seal coat maintenance to city streets is in the rearview mirror, reports City Manager Rex Thee. The process involves spraying a street with a hot tar-like emulsion before adding a layer of gravel and then using a rubber-tired roller to compact everything. Quote, we coated around 40 blocks north of Business 20 and about 80 blocks south of Business 20 this year, Thee said. All in all, it went great. We were down for about 10 days when we had a problem with the sprayer, but it rained several of those days, so we could not have worked anyway. End quote. Thee said that the temperature has to be above 70 degrees Fahrenheit for optimum application, which is one reason the city schedules the annual maintenance for the summer. Quote, we also do it in the summer because we usually have some kids working for us, and having a few extra hands really helps, he said. Thee said the city spent just under $150,000 this year. Quote, we budget $150,000 every year. That lets us maintain about 120 blocks each year, and Monahans has about 900 blocks of street. That schedule allows us to hit every street every 7 to 10 years, which is the recommended interval for seal coating, end quote. That money covers the cost of the gravel and emulsion, and city crews perform the work. Thee also reported that there is new playground equipment, new benches at Alberta Allen Park at Avenue A and Harry Street, along with a barrier around the park. Quote, the county gave us the C-purling for the barrier, and the city spent about $11,000 on the equipment. Our crews installed everything, he said. Thee said there is about twice that amount in the coming fiscal year budget for park improvements. The city is also working with Encore for planned street lighting at several intersections on the east side of town. Lighting is planned for the all-way stop at Stewart and 12th Street, at the all-way stop a few blocks east of Stewart on 12th, and the all-way stop at 15th near the 828 car wash. The city is also planning another round of maintenance projects at the airport, utilizing Rural Airport Maintenance Program grant funds. The RAMP program is administered by TxDOT Aviation and provides a 50-50 match for maintenance projects. Quote, next year's RAMP funding will be on the council's next agenda, Thee said. Continuing the quote, this past year, we upgraded all the electrical supply and equipment that will enable us to power the new fuel system, which we hope to install this year, Thee said. The new system will bring all the filter and measurement systems up to date with federal codes. RAMP funds were also used this past year to upgrade the system for electrical grounding of aircraft, replacement of windsocks, and replacing floodlights on hangars. Quote, RAMP is about doing the maintenance that needs to be done. The city does the work, and then you apply and get 50% of your expense back, end quote. The city is also the recipient of about $900,000 in funding from the Texas Coronavirus Local Fiscal Recovery Fund, which consists of federal funds administered by the state of Texas. Quote, every city in the nation got something, Thee said. The city will receive the same amount next year as well. Quote, this money can be used for infrastructure, and I'll be meeting with the city council soon on some possible projects that we have been saving money towards, he said. while a significant amount, infrastructure is not cheap. A recent study regarding upgrading the city's wastewater treatment facility ballparked the price tag at $4.5 million. Thies said cities had until August of 2024 to spend the funds. Local active COVID cases drop by one. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. According to data from the Texas Department of State Health Services, there were 183 active cases on Wednesday morning in Ward County, down from 184 on Monday. The overall countywide death count attributed to COVID is now at 25, with one additional death reported, but DSHS does not report when that death occurred, and it could have been much earlier. Since the start of the pandemic last year, there have been 1,002 confirmed cases in Ward County, up from 973 last week. Additionally, there are now 551 probable cases with 1,345 recoveries. Quote, active cases in Ward County represent about 2% of the population who have tested positive or been determined to probably have the virus at one time or another, County Judge Greg Holley said. Across the state, DSHS reports a total of 3.1 million confirmed cases since the department started tracking COVID-19, 590,842 with 57,238 deaths attributed to the virus. The current count of active cases is now 287,879, with an estimated 3.3 million recoveries. Ward Memorial Hospital reported a total of 10 patients on Wednesday morning, seven of which are diagnosed with COVID. Across the area, Ector County has 1,955 active cases. Totals for the past 18 months or so are 11,304 confirmed cases, 11,110 probable, 426 fatalities, and 20,042 recoveries. Midland County has 2,376 active cases, with an ongoing total count of 21,673 confirmed cases, no probable, 305 fatalities, and 18,992 recoveries. Winkler County has 694 confirmed cases over the course of the pandemic, 227 probable, 24 fatalities, 67 active cases, and 830 recovered. Reeves County has 285 active cases, with an ongoing count of 1,289 confirmed cases, 1,767 probable, 46 fatalities, 2,725 recovered. Pecos County has had 1,568 confirmed cases, 386 probable, 38 fatalities, and currently has 170 active cases and 1,746 recovered. Andrews County has 2,280 confirmed cases, no probable, 49 fatalities, 268 active cases, and 1,963 recovered. Residents express concerns about kids on bikes. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Local residents recently expressed concerns regarding the lack of attention paid by kids on bicycles. Local resident Jan Campbell said, quote, I was backing out of my driveway, and a bicycle ran right behind me, not noticing I was backing up. I was scared I was going to hit him, she said. Continuing the quote, there needs to be some kind of safety class for these kids. I'm worried that one of these kids is going to get hit by a car, end quote. Other residents have raised similar concerns about kids pulling in front of them, not looking at their surroundings, weaving all over the road, and not paying attention to cars. The lack of protective gear is also a concern. Monahans Police Captain Christopher Quintana said, quote, "Bicyclists have to follow the same laws as any motorist, and they can be cited for violations. Current law does not require wearing of helmets, but we strongly recommend all bicyclists wear helmets, knee pads, and elbow pads for their safety." Quote, "We are looking into conducting a bicycle safety class, but with current COVID issues, no firm schedules have been set for that. But we do plan on doing this." End quote. Stop for school buses, police warn. Motorists are urged to not pass school buses when the red lights are flashing and/or the stop sign has been deployed. Quote, "It's not only dangerous to our kids, it is also against the law," Monahans Police Captain Christopher Quintana said. "We aggressively watch for this and will issue citations for violations." End quote. Municipal Court Judge Lori Asbury said, quote, "People need to remember that motorists are required to stop in both directions, not just from behind." End quote. Violations can result in a fine from $500 to $1,250 and can be charged with a higher violation for repeat offenders, Asbury said. Quote, "Drivers are not eligible to take a driver's safety course to have the charge dismissed for this violation." End quote. Texas law mandates drivers must stop when a school bus extends its stop sign or turns on its flashing red lights. When a school bus is stopped, drivers traveling on either side of the road must come to a complete stop. If the roadway is separated by a physical barrier, like a raised median, for example, drivers do not have to stop for the school bus. Drivers must remain stopped until the bus sign or flashing lights are no longer displayed. Road Ranger, located on South Loop 464, celebrated its grand opening with a ribbon cutting by the Chamber of Commerce Ambassadors Club last Wednesday morning. The new establishment offers diesel, gasoline, snacks, and food establishments Tejas Taco, Dan's Famous Pizza, and a Wendy's and Subway restaurants will open soon. Additionally, Road Ranger features a large variety of snacks, other food items, drinks, and beer. CEO Marco Zaro had the honor of cutting the celebratory ribbon.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.